Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at UH1.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
This is The Fan of History, episode 9, where we discuss the 920s BC. I am Brennan. Along with me is Dan, the Fan of History. Say hello, Dan.
Hi, guys.
Hey. If everybody remembers last time on The Fan of History, we talked about money and how people are slowly emerging from the Dark Age. Shawshank was training his army. King Wu was ruling all of China. And we talked about how the Chauvin, and the poverty point culture. So, Dan, what is happening now in the 920s BC?
Well, first we have a recovery of commerce. And I think Shawshank, the Pharaoh of Egypt, is one of the responsible parties for this. But trade is starting to emerge from the Dark Age. And trade has been gone since the Bronze Age, with 300 years of chaos. And so it's impressive that trade returns.
So what were they doing in lieu of trade? Was it all just pillaging at this point?
Yeah, and they were all just trying to survive. I think Greek is the worst example, where like people couldn't live in the cities anymore, so people took to the hills and tried to scrape a living, trying to endure for 300 years.
Amazing.
But one of the biggest trading nations and one of the most the greatest traders of the ancient world is actually the Assyrians. The Assyrians are a warrior nation, but they are also traders. So they sort of understand trade. They want to encourage trade. They know that the wealth from trade can enable them to finance their armies. So Assyria is always looking to trade as well. And that often gets forgotten when you talk about the Assyrians, as they are so violent. But they are also the second greatest trading nation of the Near East after the Phoenicians.
So, since we think about them, you know, like when I think about them, it's the, you know, like you just said, it's all this war and what's been going on. Were the wars mostly for show, since they already had these established trades?
At this time, when they're trying to renew the yearly campaigns, these yearly campaigns are robber campaigns, and their goal is to get as much stuff as possible, to threaten to beat people up. And if they don't give you stuff, you actually beat them up and take their stuff. So it's all economy for the Assyrians, but it's also a religious duty to do this. Mm. So it's complex. And we have this king now, we got in the last episode, Ashur Dan II. And some people think that we have seen the Assyrians now only as this small nation that is besieged by Arameans, and they are fighting back, and they are surviving, but the Assyrians will go on to do great things. And some people say that the Neo-Assyrian Empire begins with Ashurdan II. And he actually goes on a couple of campaigns. I'll talk about them next episode.
Okay.
But Ashurdan is preparing the Neo-Assyrian Empire. He's really making everything better in Assyria. The country has been stabilized by his father, Tiglath-Pileser II. And now he's training the army, he's recruiting Arameans, he's building roads. And remember, the Assyrians have iron weapons, and iron weapons are very rare. This is the beginning of the... iron is all around the Assyrians, and they are making these impressive arsenals. Whereas a country like Egypt have zero iron. The iron is extremely expensive and rare in Egypt, but for the Assyrians, iron is everywhere. And they have become masters of building steel weapons.
How much more effective? Like, is there any sort of correlation between how much more effective a steel sword is as opposed to like a bronze and the armor and whatnot?
Yes, iron is more plentiful than the ingredients of bronze. It's mm-hmm. the tin that is difficult to get for bronze.
Right.
So, but if you have the tin, it's pretty easy to make a good bronze sword. But it's really hard to make a good iron weapon because you have to make it steel. You have to put carbon in it.
Right.
And getting the right balance, that was a secret of the Hittites and one of the bases of their empire, that they could do this. But these secrets have come down to the Assyrians. They are making really good iron weapons. But if you just gave a lot of iron to the Egyptians, it wouldn't help them because they couldn't make the iron weapons.
Right. It would take some time to learn that. Because I think it's the carbon that stops it from being brittle.
Exactly. So yeah. To make it hard, you need the carbon. You need it in the right amount. But it looks like Ashurdan II he knows what's coming. this country is going to be great again. Remember, they've had two empires before.
Right.
And he's obsessed with the fact that they don't have the Middle Assyrian Empire anymore. They lost it in the 11th century BC. And he wants pretty much somebody else to reclaim the Middle Assyrian Empire. He will do some campaigning and try himself, but he's setting the stage for his son, which is interesting. But the doomsday clock is 5 to 12 indeed. The nation state that will arise from the work of Ashurdan II is something the world has never seen before. And it will behave very differently from the empires of the Bronze Age.
Wow. So again, more groundwork being laid.
Yes, and this is actually all we'll talk about in the next episode, because the sort of official foundation date of the Neo-Assyrian Empire is 911 BC.
Mm-hmm.
And that is actually a date that is astrologically confirmed. So it's also our first event that is 100% true.
Wow. That's very interesting.
But while the Assyrians are building up their army still, we have somebody who is ready to go to war.
And who would that be?
That is Shawshank, the Pharaoh of Egypt.
Shawshank. As we talked about him last time.
Yeah, he will also go to the first battle we know of since we started this narrative in 1000 BC. In 926 BC, we have the Battle of the Bitter Lakes. That's a great name for a battle. Turns out that the Bitter Lakes are lakes that are part of the Suez Canal today. It's pretty bad lakes. You don't want to drink from them.
They're all brackish and kind of gross.
And they were used in the Second World War to sort of imprison the French fleet. one of the things that happened in the Bitter Lakes.
Wow.
But this area is outside of Egyptian control, but it's really close to Egypt. And there are some Bedouins that are causing trouble for Egypt. They're raiding Egypt. They are probably Arabs, but the term Arab will not be used for another 70 years. And we'll make a lot of fuss when people are actually called Arabs in a later episode. But I think these guys are Arab Bedouins. But they have made small raids. And to counter these small raids, Shawshank brings an enormous army. So it's overkill by far. And there is a scribe called Hori who writes down the tale of the Battle of the Bitter Lakes. So it has come down to us. And I think it was never the plan of Shawshank just to fight these Bedouins. So when the Bedouins get a response from the Egyptian state, they are quite overwhelmed when the whole Egyptian army shows up. They're like, oh, I didn't sign up for this.
Yeah. Hey, whoa. We were just coming over to steal some sheep, maybe some textiles. We didn't want to be slaughtered.
And they are slaughtered. So the Egyptians win this battle, and we don't have any details of the fighting itself, but that was never the point of the Egyptians, because now they have a huge army, and it is outside of Egypt, and it is right next to Canaan.
Canaan. So, let me guess, Shawshank decides to attack Canaan?
Yes. And in the New Kingdom, in the Bronze Age, Canaan was always... all of the Levant was a contested area between Egypt and the Hittite Empire. So the Egyptians feel very strongly that this is a part of Egypt. And that's very important, because if you bring an Egyptian soldier, Egypt never became a great empire. And that's because an Egyptian has to be buried in Egypt to get to enjoy the afterlife.
Right.
So if you die on a foreign campaign, you are doomed forever. So no Egyptian soldier wants to go outside of Egypt. But this is Egypt. Shawshank makes the argument that this is our land. We need to take it back. And all this right. Even makes the Bible. So Shawshank is called Shishak in the Bible. And the Bible makes a lot of... fuss about the fact that Shawshank raided Jerusalem, invaded it, and took the Ark of the Covenant.
But had he not taken the Ark of the Covenant, we'd have never had Indiana Jones.
Yes, and that's the story from the first Indiana Jones movie, Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Right.
They get the date wrong. They say that it happened in 980 BC, but that also shows the uncertainty of the dates here, that Egyptian dating is really hard, and we could be off by 60 years for Egypt. It is not impossible.
Why are the dates so hard? Is something within their calendar arbitrary, or is it just a translation?
They date their years by the year of the king.
Mm-hmm.
So this is year... I should know this. This is year... 19, maybe, of Shawshank.
Okay.
So all they care about is, this is year 19 of Shawshank.
I gotcha.
So then, the Egyptologists, they don't know how many years somebody ruled. So they have to go with, okay, somebody mentioned year 19 of Shawshank, so he probably ruled for at least 19 years.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe he ruled 22, maybe he ruled 25 years. So you have to look at every pharaoh. And then there are gaps in the pharaoh lists because they have been trying to erase each other from history. So then you could miss a pharaoh that ruled for 20 years.
So you're off. I see.
Yes. And then for every pharaoh, there's an uncertainty when he actually died. So Egyptian dates are far less
reliable
than the Assyrian dates that we will soon get to experience. Sorry, you were saying?
Oh, I was saying the dates seem extremely flexible.
Yes.
So.
And sadly, for this time, the Egyptian dates are among the best.
Oh, wow. Well, we have to go with what we know, right?
Yeah. And one thing, I have made a video about this, but the Old Testament is really a very unreliable source. And my hypothesis at this time is that the king Omri in the Old Testament, who probably becomes the king of Israel in 884 BC, he is actually the first king of Israel. And everything that happens before that are pretty much lies that are inserted by Yahweh worshippers because Omri did not worship Yahweh. So they make up all this stuff about David and Solomon, and there is almost zero archaeological evidence for the great kingdom of Solomon and David, because in the Bible it's this kingdom that Shoshenk invades and crushes. But Shoshenk is an Egyptian pharaoh, so he likes to record everything he does. And he has done a great big stone wall, or several, about this campaign. And he lists 165 places he conquered, and Jerusalem is not among them.
Wow.
And he never meant the kingdom.
Huh.
So that's pretty bad for the reliability of the Old Testament, that we have this golden kingdom and Shoshenk is like, oh, what? But I didn't notice that. But what happens is that Shoshenk invades, he moves all the way through what is today Israel, up almost into Syria. He conquers 165 cities. He... there is a pass near Megiddo. This is in the north of Israel.
Okay.
And you have... That's where the Canaanites are trying to stop Shoshenk. And there's two passes that are... There are two passes that are big and one pass that is really narrow. So you have to choose one of these three passes to go through. And if you choose the really narrow passage, you will be very easy to ambush. So when Shoshenk comes up to this spot, he has to make this choice. Which way do I go? And this is where Egyptian record keeping helps him, because another Egyptian pharaoh long, long ago faced the exact same problem at the exact same spot. And that was Thutmose III, I think. And he chose the narrow pass because nobody would expect him to take that pass. And it worked. So Shoshenk does the same thing.
So he basically he risked it all in hopes of a surprise attack.
Yes.
Wow.
And it worked. So Shoshenk goes like, if it worked for him, it's gonna work for me. And it does, because the Canaanites don't remember this.
Oh my gosh. Crazy.
And he makes inscriptions all over the place. There are inscriptions confirmed from Shoshenk at Al-Hiba and Kamak. There's also Stele in Megiddo with Shoshenk's name on it. He doesn't attack the Phoenicians. So he comes right up to the Phoenicians and he goes like, hi guys, what do you have for me today that I can buy? So they sell him stuff and they make a statue of him and put it in Byblos because he's so great. And this statue has the king of Byblos. He notes his name at the bottom.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Of the statue, like, I was here when this happened.
That's funny. He just signed, basically like kids on a new sidewalk. They put their name and then was here and then a date.
Yeah, but they keep the statue of the Egyptian pharaoh there. Like, oh, this great guy came to our city. It was awesome.
That's amazing.
There are probably Israelites in several of these cities, but there is no Israelite state at this time. And we're going to have to wait until 884 BC to see a nation state.
Gotcha.
But okay. When Shoshenk is done, this is all done in a year. It's just blitzkrieg all over the place.
That's an incredible year.
Yeah, and then he just goes back with his booty, including then perhaps the Ark of the Covenant.
Uh-huh.
And he goes back to Egypt, and he's done. There is no follow-up.
That's it. He just goes, does all that, comes back.
Yeah, and the Canaanites Amazing. And Israelites go, like, what happened?
Funny.
So I'm not sure why he did this campaign at all, actually. And he returns to Egypt. He campaigns to the south, beating up the Nubians. Remember, they made an incursion into Egypt a couple of years ago. And then he builds stuff, telling everybody of his awesome campaign.
Of course.
If you arrive to Karnak Temple, the first thing you see is a pylon of Shoshenk. So he builds where the great pharaohs of old built. And then in 924 BC, he dies, probably of natural causes.
Really? So in two years, he does a massive campaign, comes back, and then just passes away.
Yeah, and he spent 20 years preparing for this war.
I wonder if it's one of those things, like, you know, a lot of people here, when they work their entire life and then they retire, and then in just a couple of years, their health is failing, and they kind of accomplished what they're going to accomplish, and that's it.
Yeah, maybe it was a bucket list thing. I have to conquer 165 cities.
Hey, check that off.
That's amazing. It's kind of sad because this 22nd dynasty that begins with Shoshenk, it will never see a pharaoh like him again. He's the greatest pharaoh of the dynasty.
Wow.
And it rules Egypt for quite some time. And it's also a golden opportunity for Egypt that Egypt does not follow up on. So this was maybe a chance to rebuild the glory of the new kingdom. But it doesn't happen. And his successor, Osorkon I, different from his uncle, Osorkon the Elder, who was pharaoh of the latest dynasty, of the 21st. Osorkon I is a peaceful pharaoh who will rule Egypt for 35 years. And it's a great time, the reign of Osorkon I, but it's death for Egypt because Egypt is falling behind quickly now because Egypt doesn't need anyone else. As long as you have the Nile, you get these four harvests, everything is good.
Right.
But the world outside will not leave Egypt alone forever.
No, there's there's too many resources. Of course they're not going to be left alone.
It's a great source of a lot of food. There is one more thing about Shoshenk. Like all Egyptian pharaohs, people are interested in the tomb. And remember, the tombs of the 21st dynasty were extremely rich, much richer than Tutankhamun's. But they have never found Shoshenk's tomb. And he's a king of the delta. So things doesn't preserve in the delta because the delta is wet. But there's been a lot of search for it, and this is why people are searching in Tanis in the Indiana Jones movie, because they're looking in Tanis for the tomb of Shoshenk. But and he has a funeral temple, and the cult goes on for a long while. They worship Shoshenk there, and as a mystery thing, his organs were put into canoptic jars.
Okay.
For his mummifications. And one of these jars was donated to the Egyptian Museum in 1891. So this jar came out of Shoshenk's tomb. So we know that somebody has been in the tomb. So it is probably plundered. But they could never trace this jar to anyone.
Well, how did they verify that it was actually his?
His royal sign on it.
Yeah.
This is my liver. Shoshenk. When he started his reign, he made sure that Egypt would be unified by putting his sons everywhere. But of course, this will break down. And his son, Yeptai-Funk, Yeptai-Funk, the third prophet Amun, his tomb has been found.
Right.
And we have four other kings of the 22nd dynasty who will be Shoshenq. So there will be a Shoshenq the second, Shoshenq the third, etc. Because this name will be a pillar of the 22nd dynasty. They will look back to the days of Shoshenq and remember when things were in order and Egypt was actually powerful. He'll have a rough time in Egypt.
Right. Start setting up again. More setup.
Yes, but they are now ruled by Osorkon I, who becomes the pharaoh then in 924 BC. And he is a great pharaoh. He's peaceful. There's a prosperity.
Nice.
Everything looks great on the surface.
Well, that's always a good sign. A lot of people rule for a long time when everybody's fat and happy. So what does he lead up to? Like, when Asukan, what's his driving force? You know, we saw Shoshenq was to conquer all those cities. So now,
there is very little on Asukan the First. We'll talk more about him, but he is mainly just a good, nice king who runs a long and prosperous reign. So
nice.
Everything is nice.
Well, great. So I guess that's we're going to leave Egypt for a minute. Going to leave it in good hands. That seems to be doing quite well. And go back over and talk about King Mu, because King Mu is about to have a birthday of sorts.
Yes. He reaches the venerable age of 105 years.
Wow.
He has ruled Yo China for 50 years.
That's incredible.
Yeah, it's incredible, and maybe it's not even believable.
Could it be
reliable dates in China very soon, actually. There will be astrological events confirming dates in the 9th century.
Could it be that there is more than one person called King Mu?
I don't know. It's very little is known about this period in China, and it gets worse with the next king. He's Gong of Yu,
right?
And he is the son of King Mu. And we don't know a lot about him, sadly. And when we talk about these Egyptians and Assyrians and Babylonians and stuff, we must remember that half of the world's population is probably in China, and China is by far the most powerful nation state in the world. That's
it's
easy
huge.
To forget. Yeah.
Yeah, China was then and is now an enormous country.
Yes, but China will become a lot less powerful in the later years of the Zhou dynasty. But right now, it's still the golden age of the Western Zhou.
Excellent. So, what is going on in Africa? We've talked a lot about, you know, Egypt and the northern part of Africa. What about below that, everything south of the Sahara Desert?
When I started doing this, I really like to cover all the world, but there are just areas where we know so much and areas where we know so little. So there is no great civilization in Africa until for 2,000 years, actually, from this point.
Mm-hmm.
But we have archaeology and we have genetics.
Right.
So we know that there are a people called the Khoisan. They are in the Stone Age. They are hunter-gatherers, and they are all over southern Africa.
Hmm.
And they are composed of the San. They are foraging bushmen. And the Khoi, and they will become pastoral, which they are also known more commonly as the Hottentots, which is a word some people might have heard. But they are about to have a bad day, because in the sort of south of the Sahara, The Bantu migration is starting, and we'll talk more about the Bantu expansion in the next show, but this is probably fueled by agriculture. So I think the Bantu has agriculture, and agriculture supports a much larger population than hunter-gatherers could support.
Right.
So the Bantu people become numerous, and they spread out over Africa, pushing back the Khoisan. But there are still Khoisan people in Africa today, notably in the Kalahari Desert, but they are really few compared to the Bantu. But even pretty much, except they have agriculture.
Oh, actually, you cut out that last part. What did you say about except they have what you said just before, except they have agriculture?
The Bantu are also still in the Stone Age. But they do have agriculture, so they're in a later stage of the Stone Age. But Africa is really far behind. But it's not as far behind as Madagascar or New Zealand, because there are no Homo sapiens there.
Wow, even still.
So they are still in some geological era.
That's incredible. Because today we think about there's basically no place on this planet that doesn't have some form of human.
Yeah, and it'll be late before humans come to these places. And that's all we have for the 920s BC.
That's a lot of stuff to go over on the 920s. Yep. Wow. A lot of campaigns and just state of the unions, as it were.
Yeah, when we get into the 9th and the 8th century BC, there's a lot more information about things like this. So it's rare that we have a campaign like this for the 10th century BC. If you check out our YouTube, it's YouTube Fan of History. You'll see that the YouTube show is quite far ahead of this. So you can get sneak peeks on YouTube.
Yeah, so again, yeah, like Dan said, go to the YouTube. When you're at the YouTube, we'd like you to subscribe, like, share it with your friends, give us a review. Also on iTunes, because we are also on iTunes. Want everybody to also know that coming up next week on The Fan of History, we're going to talk about the decade reports, and that we're also going to be talking about the... I'm going to cut this part out.
Yes.
All right. Next time on The Fan of History, we're going to talk about the 910s, the teens, however you want to say it, BC. In this time, it's the Assyrians. It's time for them to strike back and reclaim what was once theirs.
This is the most popular YouTube episode I made. And it's going to be all about the Assyrians. We're going to talk about the work of Ashurdan II and what will happen. Because the Assyrians want their empire back. And anybody who stands in the way will have a bad time.
Yep. Again, Dan and I talked about this off air, but cultures have long memories. And if they want it back, it's going to be the driving force. So, also, we have a Patreon. If you enjoy The Fan of History, if you would like us to keep doing this, if you would like to contribute in some way, patreon.com/fanofhistory. You can search us there. And we have tiers for support. One of the more interesting tiers is that we will actually do an entire cast or show based on your request. So, Dan, was there anything else you want to talk about the Patreon and what it enables? Talk about the Patreon and what it enables for us.
Yeah, we have some patrons already, so we have promised to continue until 700 BC, we will continue this narrative to 600 BC if we get some more patrons, and we'll continue to 500 BC. If we get even more patrons. And then this sort of doing it breaks down, because for the 5th century BC, we have so many sources. So right. What we're going to do next is the history of Greece for the 5th century BC, and that includes the Battle of Thermopylae, 300, the Marathon, the Peloponnesian War, all of that good stuff. And then there are some very big claims if we really become successful, but you can check that out on Patreon.
There it is.
We also have a Facebook page.
Yes, Facebook /Fan of History. We have Twitter, which is also The Fan of History. There's a website for the show, thefanofhistory.wordpress.com.
And if you want to leave comments or ask questions, or comment on any YouTube video, because I probably check those comments 10 times a day, I think.
Yeah, Dan's a fan of YouTube comments.
Yes.
He is always out there and will always talk back with you. So I guess that brings us to the end of this episode.
See you in Assyria.
Looking forward to it.
If you enjoyed this podcast, please consider supporting us on Patreon. Patreon.com/fanofhistory. Just a dollar an episode would help us out. Thanks, and see you next time.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.